May 5th, 2012, Rapidash Educational Convention.
Shina Singh Adaya Singh Adaya Adaya Singh Adaya Praladesh Adaya Pranamukapan Purinaka. Padiksha Diksha Damadhas Mantha Dantharva Yur Bhagavan Narasimha Payopaya Loka Payas Vainas Patejo Sakrasta Samasta Deja. Nice to be speaking on the appearance day of Singh Day on philosophy of education. When do I have until? Oh, time cover.
5 past.
5. Philosophy of education is about, as Sesha Prabhu, our education minister, was introduced in terms of integrity. It's about having integrity and authenticity. It's about taking what we believe in general about life, bringing that to what we believe about education, and having that show up in what we do. This is from Covey. A poll of 23,000 employees, only 37% have a clear understanding of what their organization is trying to achieve and why. Only 1 in 5 are enthusiastic about their teams and their organization's goals. Only 1 in 5 have a clear line of sight between their tasks and the goals of their team and the goals of the organization. Only 15% felt that their organization fully enables them to achieve their goals, and only 20% trusted their organization. What would that mean if we had a soccer team? Translate that into a soccer team. Only 4 out of 11 players know which goal is theirs. Only 2 out of 11 players would care which goal is theirs. Only 2 out of 11 would know what position they play, what exactly they're supposed to do. And all except 2, so 9 out of 11, would in one way be competing against their own team members rather than the opponent. Does that sound anything like education? Obviously, you care. You took some trouble and maybe some money and some effort to come here. And you're sitting here giving me a very valuable time. I'm assuming that each of you, 40 minutes of your time, is probably worth at least 500 euros. Why do you care? Why are you investing 500 euros worth of your energy to find out what's the philosophy of education? What are the aspects that it impacts? And we're going to look at a few examples. If you're really interested, you can look at the paper we drafted in 2006, which needs a lot more work, on philosophy of education. I sent you all a summary of it, and one person asked me, who was that that asked me for the whole thing? Somebody here emailed me and asked me, asked me for the whole thing. All right, what is the philosophy of education? And if you had our sheet. It's a description of principles upon which learning and teaching rest. It delineates what education is, its purpose, the relationship between education and society, the definition of a learner's basic needs and identity, the relationship between the learners and the teachers, and the process of learning. The other day we visited the St. James School, and they start out by saying, our philosophy of life is that we're all the same spiritual essence. That translates into our philosophy of education because we believe that the children already have in them everything they need to know, and our job is to help bring it out. Therefore, in our practical teaching, we engage in this way. So they went from, this is what we believe in general about the nature of reality. This is how we apply that to education in theory. And what we actually do in the classroom reflects that theory. That's called integrated, or integrity, or authentic. I'm sure each of us has certain things that we believe are true in general. We translate that as to how I want to behave. In theory, I walk around with an idealized formula up there somewhere. That idealized formula represents what I would do, what I would say, what I would think if I lived and breathed and felt what I say I believe in general. Do you all have an idealized person of yourself? What you would like to be if you were fully integrated? And then we try step by step, I don't know about you, but I fail as much as I succeed, or maybe a lot more. But we try step by step to be that idealized person. Do you know that most of the decisions in our life are made not by a careful evaluation of pros and cons, but on the basis of identity? Who am I? And everybody does this. That's why advertisers appeal to identity. All right? I am a Gujarati husband. What does a good Gujarati husband do? And that's how we make our decisions. I am this, I am that. The essence of Krishna consciousness is, of course, on an individual level, sarvapadi vinirvutan takparatena nirmala rishikesha rishikesha saivanam bhakti rishite. That I am no longer a Gujarati husband, an American lady, vanaprastha, a philosopher, a carpenter, but I am a servant of Krishna, I am a servant of God. And what does that person do? So that's on an individual level. That's the essence. Prabhupada said, how do you preach? The devotee said, we start by preaching there's a God. He said, no, first you preach, I'm not this body. Every decision we make in our life is based on identity. It's all based on an idealized picture of who we think we are. And if you want to write to me for the research, I'll send it to you. I don't have time for 40 minutes. It's not based on, okay, what's the cost benefits in a rational, detached kind of way. It's based on, who am I? But this is not only true on an individual basis. This is also true when it comes to a school, when it comes to a temple, when it comes to an organization. Who am I? And all my other decisions are based on that identity. What are my priorities? What do I give money to? What do I give time to? What do I give energy? How do I organize my life? What's my relationship with others? What do I consider success? I mean, we all agree that we want success, but when I went to school, success was have a career of high status and make a lot of money so you can buy the things you want and have some positive impact for the good of the world. So we're also interested in success. But what is success? We really like Maharaj's presentation. What is success? Find my place in the world, help Mahaprabhu's mission, and realize my relationship with Radha Krishna. And if that's our definition of our identity and our definition of success, that should also change how our schools identify themselves. What does we consider success for a school? And it should then inform our day-to-day decision. Who's a qualified teacher? What's a relationship, a proper relationship with the student? What should we teach? How should we teach it? What should we give our priorities to? The fact that we don't have a clear philosophy of education has caused a lot of problems in our Hare Krishna movement. What's ironic and sad, and almost to the point of a tragedy, is that there's many members of our movement who think we have a philosophy of education. They've taken some isolated quotes of Srila Prabhupada, totally divorced them from their context and their meaning and their intentions, and put them into sort of a solid edifice, like an insect that's trapped in a piece of amber, and said, our philosophy of education is like this. The result of which is what Lakshmi was speaking about in the video. And therefore, we have been given some specific problems. We had, a few years ago, two people in Vrindavan who made a complaint to the GBC about the Vrindavan school, the BGIS. They said the BGIS is not fulfilling Srila Prabhupada's desire for a school. Basically, what they were saying is, in essence, is it doesn't have the right philosophy of education. So GBC approached the Sastric Advisory Council, who decided it wasn't their business. And I being what I am, I said, well, I'll do it. So I wrote a little paper, and I said, we don't know what the philosophy of education is. We need to do research to find out what is Krishna conscious education in all these categories, which we'll list in a moment. Then we need someone to go into the Vrindavan school and see what they're actually doing, because we don't have any kind of a supervisory facility. And then we need to compare what they're doing to the criteria. Do you see what the essence of that problem is? We don't know what a good school is. I get questions all the time. Oh, Arila, that school there, such and such place, is it a good school? I said, I don't know. What do you mean by good? What does a good school do? What does it look like? What are the results? How do you know it's successful? The children all get good jobs and chant Hare Krishna in the evening? Or they sit down and meditate on Hare Krishna? They know how to do fire jugs? Or what do you mean? What is a good school? Another case study is in Mayapur. We have three, or you could say four, schools there. And all of those schools feel that they're following Srila Prabhupada and they're following Krishna consciousness. But for years we've been trying to get those schools to cooperate. Instead of that, they criticize each other. Well, that's from the end, I've been following Srila Prabhupada. Well, that's from the end, I've been following Srila Prabhupada. And if you say, well, what is our philosophy of education? Well, gosh, we don't know. Is anybody presenting a philosophy of education that we could agree on? You know, I doubt that. Maybe someone's presenting a philosophy of education that their particular followers and the people who are respectful of say, you know, that's it. But nobody's presenting everything, that even the majority of the members of ISKCON say, no, that's it. That's what our philosophy of education is. And I believe that because we haven't had a clear philosophy of education, our trying to go ahead and build a system of education is crippled from the start. We can't even agree on where we're going. We're a soccer team who doesn't know which goal is ours and which is the opponent's. And most people don't even care. People also come to me all the time, Arila, I want to start a school. That's nice. Why don't we first figure out what's a good school? Oh, I already know what's a good school. We have so little coordination and so little communication. When I was in Mayapur working with the MI, so Prasanta, who's the head of the VIHG, was in Mayapur, and I said to the head of the MI, hey, the VIHG teaches pretty much the same thing as the MI. Why don't we get together and talk about it? Maybe they could learn from you, and you could learn from them, and we could share resources. But it never happened. We're so used to, in my opinion, the reason is, and I may be totally off base, we're so used to an environment where everybody says, we have the philosophy, correct philosophy of education, and you don't, that we're afraid of anybody encroaching in our territory and maybe saying, hey, what about this? And maybe you could do this this way, maybe you could do this this way. So even in areas where we have more than one school, we don't talk to each other. We don't share, we don't communicate. Although we criticize. You know, look at that school, they're doing it that way. Look at that school, they're doing it that way. We steal teachers from each other. We steal students from each other. Do we really want to have those ashram schools? Is that not appropriate anymore? Oh, you guys have a day school. That's really in Maya. Now, tomorrow morning, Krishna willing, I'll be speaking about principles of education that I isolated particularly from a series of lectures Srila Prabhupada gave in 1976 in Mumbai, where he was conflating Gurukul education and the Brahmacharya ashram for the adults in the temple. And one of my points there was it's much more a philosophy of education, which makes a good school is a lot more about principles than the external format. I don't see how we're ever going to move education forward in the Hare Krishna movement until we have an actually researched, understood, applied, not theoretical, on the ground, I know what that means right now in my classroom, philosophy of education. I just don't see it. All we've been able to come up with are isolated projects that are all trying to struggle and survive on their own, trying to get money, trying to get people, trying to get support, and existing in a sea of criticism. That's not Krishna conscious enough. It's too Krishna conscious. You need more academics. You need more spiritual life. Your teachers aren't qualified academically. Your teachers aren't qualified devotionally. You're spending too much time on sports. All those are a bunch of frivolous sports. Why do you have those two girls together in secondary? Why aren't you training boys and girls how to deal with each other? And on, and on, and on. And everybody thinking, I know it's a good school. Let's look at the areas that are packed in. Those of you who got the sheet, and because I'm assuming that the majority of you do not have it, have it in front of you, or I want to view from here. So what does the philosophy affect? It affects our educational materials and our resources, our materials and our resources. What do we use to teach? 6 years ago when I was at St. James, they said your educational materials are to a school what food is to a restaurant. It's nourishing the students. The methods of teaching and learning. What's the proper method for teaching? How do people learn? How you organize your classroom. Are the kids separated by age? All the 5-year-olds here, all the 6-year-olds here? Or you have mixed age learning? Does everyone have to learn the same thing at the same time? Okay, everybody open up your book to page 10. Put your finger on number 23 and recite with me. But teacher, I already know this. Too bad, I have to do it with everybody else. But teacher, I don't understand this. It's too hard for me. It's too bad, I have to do it with everybody else. Just this little... A little political announcement will come up. This is now a political announcement. The modern system of separating kids by age and teaching them all the same thing was developed not by educators. It was developed by the same people who developed the factories in the beginning of industrialization. And they developed that system specifically to imitate the factories. That was their intention, because they were trying to train children to grow up and work in the factories. So industrialization started, and compulsory education came into existence because the kids who had formerly been working in a positive way for economic development and the family who had to work in factories, who took them out and put them into schools, they said, let's organize the schools like factories. Not because they did any kind of research, not because it was psychologically good for the children or the families or the community, but because they were so full of themselves that we can have this wonderful new way to produce goods, let's produce children the same way. And if we produce children that way, they'll be good fodder for working in factories once they graduate. That's where that system came from. Okay, finish with the plan for the comments. So the philosophy of education tells us how we should organize the classroom. Do we teach kids in their own way, at their own pace? Or do we teach everybody the same way at the same time? And how do we group the children? What kind of relationship do you have with the teacher? Do you have a new teacher every year? Because it doesn't really matter. It's not really about relationship with the teacher at all, is it? So this year you're with this teacher, this year we're with that teacher.
Teacher tests by the time the teacher gets to know you out of the classroom. The content of being taught, what's being taught, what subjects are being taught, and how much time you're going to spend on each of them. And what's the core subjects, what's extracurricular subjects. Is Shastra a core subject or is it an extracurricular subject? How much time do you spend on that? Who's going to teach that? The goal of student discipline and training, what's your purpose? And what's your process of student discipline and training? How do you train the teachers? How do you train the leaders? Do you have discrete subjects or do you teach thematically? Is this English class? Is this math class? Is this science class? Or are you going to be teaching about Lord Singhadev and bringing in everything that way? What kind of relationships do students have with teachers? Do students have with each other? Do parents have with teachers? Do the teachers have with the society? Do the teachers have with the administrator? Do the staff have with the government and so forth? What kind of policies do you have about dress, about food, about media, about your school schedule, about boy-girl interactions, about your system of eating? It's really interesting in St. James, what they had for lunch, although it was sort of an institutional room, with institutional type tables. Before the kids would come into lunch, they had bowls of fruit, bowls of salad, and rolls and butter on each table. You ate at a table with your class and with your teacher in a family atmosphere, and they had a rule nobody was allowed to serve themselves, but everybody had to serve those next to them. So what kind of policies do you have about eating? What kind of building types do you have? What does your building look like? Is it according to Vastu? Is it ecologically sound? What kind of spaces are there? Is it a space that's flexible? Is it a space that's rigid? Those are all the things that are coming from a philosophy of education. Now, we're going to do all of those things whether we have a philosophy of education that's based on our transcendent philosophy or not. If you don't have a philosophy of education, you're still going to decide what books to use. You're still going to have student-teacher relationships. You're still going to have a building. You're still going to group your children. You're still going to define what's success. But guess what's going to happen? You're probably going to have one thing governed by one philosophy, another thing governed by another 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 philosophy, and you're not going to be integrated. Integrity doesn't just mean that I take good care of money. Integrity means I'm an integrated person. And how powerful it would be if our educational institutions were actually integrated and where the experience the child had in the classroom, the processes that were going on, or I don't want to just say child, sorry, I keep forgetting here. The experience the child, the adult, any learner has in the classroom, that the nature of that experience is not different than the goal. As Krishna puts it, Samasya Bhagavad Gita 4:24, everything merges into transcendence. Years ago, I had a very life-changing experience, about 12 years ago, when I was thinking about getting more into fundraising, and I read a book called Growing Givers' Hearts, which I really highly recommend. And it was about research done into Christian organizations that fundraise when their methods of fundraising, when their attitude towards fundraising was in line with biblical principles, not just what they use the money for. It was revolutionary, to me anyway. And I said, oh, there's charity in the three modes of nature. But we often do charity in the mode of ignorance, encourage people to do charity in the mode of ignorance and charity in the mode of passion and say just because it's used for Krishna, it's all transcendental. And we forget that the process of the giver, the experience that the person has when giving should be just as enlightening as what the money is used for. When I was full-time in the classroom, I used to think, suppose one of my kids dies tomorrow, because it happened to me that one of my kids died tomorrow. I'm Prabhupada's Vyasa Puja Day.
If one of my kids dies tomorrow, what's the value of what they're doing right now in school? They shouldn't be learning just for something in the future. They should be achieving the essence of education now. But that means everything we're doing in education should be also in line with our idea of Krishna consciousness. I want to give you just a very few specific examples. We have some more detail in the paper that you received electronically. If you want the complete paper, just email me. I will send it to you. Fully, completely, totally, absolutely admit that that paper is not complete. It's a start. It looks really nice, but as far as content goes, it's really just a lump of clay on the potter's wheel waiting to really be developed. But let's look at a few examples. You know, Krishna is so amazing. He is really amazing. I was taking care of my Shilas in the Pujari room in the Soho temple, and I had just finished it. I was listening to the lecture on my little MP3 player, took it out of my ears, put it away, and a devotee turned on the talk by Bhakti Vikyana Maharaj. I heard 2 minutes of it, and I said, philosophy of education in Radhadesh. He said, materially, different subject matter have a different foundation. The foundation of modern psychology, the foundation of modern chemistry, the foundation of modern mathematics, they're all different. You can say they have some similarities, they all believe would only gross matter. But the basic essence of those sciences are all completely different. And he said, in Krishna consciousness, the basis is all the same. Our philosophy of reality is that everything's integrated. Krishna says there's no being free from the modes of material nature. We see the modes of material nature as a unifying principle in mathematics, in science, in chemistry, in psychology, in every field of human endeavor. We have our Sankhya philosophy, the different elements, earth, water, fire, ether, mind, intelligence, false ego. We have a unified view of material nature. I don't know if you've studied various sciences according to the Vedic view, like Ayurveda. It relates back to the three modes of material nature, with water, fire, or ether. You can talk about kapha, pitta, vata in terms of the modes of nature. Fire is goodness, water is passion, air is ignorance. We have a different mix of these in our bodies, which then determines the modes of our body, the modes of our psychology, which then determines what kind of work we can do. And this also governs the nature of every single physical object. Now, what does that mean? That means that if we really taught according to our philosophy of education, we would teach thematically, we would teach cross-curricular. And I was thinking, we were discussing it, and until I heard that by Bhakti Yamaraj just a couple days ago, I've always subscribed to the idea of, well, yeah, secondary, you can't do that. That's just an elementary. But somehow those 2 minutes, and I said, yeah. Even you're teaching chemistry, you're teaching mathematics, you're teaching psychology, you're coming from the same basis. You're coming from the same understanding. Our teacher training should reflect that. Our resources should reflect that. And of course, even the modern empiric research shows that that's how we learn. We as adults very rarely sit down and say, I think I'm going to study physics. I think I'm going to study, soil science. We say, I think I want to plant some daisies in my backyard. And so we study something about climate, and we study something about the soil, and we study something about daisies. And we do some mathematical calculations, and we read some things. So we want to do something, in the process of doing something, we study so many things. You study the subjects Krishna learned in school. They weren't so much things like math and English and chemistry, were they? They were more projects. I mean, fun projects, like making music underwater, which then pulled in all of these subjects. What about Chinchipeda Bhaktivedanta? Modern educationalists are trying to say, hey, everybody's equal. Let's treat everybody equally. Oh, but let's differentiate our instruction. They don't know how to do it. When they
try to treat everybody equally, all they do is take the educational program down to the lowest denominator. So that what used to be taught to 10-year-olds is now being taught to 20-year-olds. That's their idea of oneness. And when they try to differentiate, they don't really know how to differentiate according to people's psychophysical nature. I mean, they try. They have some good idea, like the 7 intelligences and the 3 learning abilities and things like that. But if we really take a Chintu Beta Beta Tantra, that we're all one, and yet we're all unique individuals, and we take that into our philosophy of education, then we know how to take it into the classroom. Yes, we differentiate education, but everybody is equally valuable. And everything everyone does is equally valuable. No, we're not going to hold back the whole class for 2 kids, or push the whole class ahead for 2 kids. We're going to structure pace, we're going to structure type, we're going to structure content according to what you really need and what's going to excite you, but everything is equally valuable. You're talking about Varnashram. Okay, the Brahmanas protect knowledge, the Kshatriyas protect people, the Vaishyas protect the natural resources and the animals, and the Shudras protect the arts and the skills and the crafts. And it's all equally valuable. If your arts and skills and crafts are used to promote sensuality and materialism, it's very hard to protect knowledge. Absolute and progressive. So we also have a philosophy that there's an absolute truth and a highest understanding, but we also have one that advancement is progressive and individual. And Maharaj outlined 5 ways of progression, talked about in Nectar Construction. So far I've identified 18 ways that Srila Prabhupada talks about the progression. Well, this can translate into a philosophy of education, that we have some absolute criterion. We have absolute criterion referenced guidelines, but we'd also be assessing people according to their personal advancement on their personal path. Not that everyone to be a success has to get the same grade in every subject. What about this relationship between the guru-disciple, the guru-disciple principle? If we translate that into a philosophy of education, like Prabhupada said, we'll talk about this tomorrow, there should be a great bond of love between the guru and the disciple. That means there should be a great bond of love between the students and the teacher. And this doesn't matter, are you learning Shastra, are you learning mathematics? That means there should be time to develop a relationship, not a factory. Not, okay, I'm moving into this classroom, now I'm 8 years old, I get this teacher doing this to me. Now I'm moving into this classroom, I'm 9 years old, and this teacher does this to me. But actually a personal relationship where you're really invested. We also have in our general philosophy the role of good character. Krishna gives an incredible process of knowledge in 13.8.12. He doesn't say that knowledge is have good SES and high IQ and study hard and cram in your books. He says the process of knowledge is have good character. Because knowledge is understood as clearing the cobwebs away from the mind so you can see what's already there. Now that would translate into a philosophy of education, into really stressing what the learners are like internally. What's their internal process? What kind of people are they? Because we know knowledge isn't just information, it's wisdom. What about the role of experience? Maharaj also talked about this, especially at the end, in the stages of meditation. Raja Vidya, Raja Kriyam, Pavitram, Idam Uttamam, Pratyakshavagamam, Dharmam, Susukamkarthamavya. What is knowledge? It's Pratyaksha, it's experience. Susukam, it's happy. If you're teachers, you can immediately understand, hey, knowledge is supposed to be experienced and happy. Knowledge is supposed to be experience and happy. And if my students, if my learners are not experiencing and they're not happy, maybe that's some kind of knowledge, but it's sure not the Rajavidya. Maybe it's the, you know, toilet cleaner vidya, but it's not the king vidya. The knowledge we're looking for is experience knowledge and happy knowledge. Can you see immediately how that would translate into how you teach? And how you learn? If you understood knowledge had to be experienced and happy? All right, what do we do? How much more time do we have?
You got 4 minutes.
4 minutes. Okay, what do we do? So I'd like to suggest that first of all, we can start with something. I learned many things from doing that Learn to Read program, and one of them is just start with what you have. Don't think, God, I need $10 million and 250 people and a big building and a big research facility, and then I can do it. That's like saying, first I have to have this, then I have this, and then I can be Christian conscious. So we can start with something. We can start by isolating what are the main tenets of our overall philosophy. Pick a few of them. I picked just a few of them here. Unifying principles, group disciple principle, role of good character, role of experience, absolute and progressive, one indifference. Pick a few of them. Pick one of them. And say, how does this translate into education? What is this basic principle that I say, I believe in this? How does that translate into education? And how can that translate into practical action today, right now, this week, this class, with the people that I'm teaching? With the way I design my lesson. Start with that. It doesn't even matter if anybody else agrees with you. You tell anybody else, you can start with that. But what I'd also like to see on a broader scale is we actually become philosophers and scholars. I was so happy when I visited the Krishnamurti school and we're talking about instituting Learn to Read, and the head teacher said, what we need to do is institute it and then do some research to see how it works. I just practically started to cry. Wow, professional. So some research, not just pull a quote from Srila Prabhupada out of context and enshrine it as a principle if it wasn't meant to be one. And say, no, everybody's got to do this this way.
Yes.
But actual research and starting to put together something that's not ivory tower, not just the theoretical, but here's how it's going to work. And to have a plan which we're starting Krishna willing at Bhaktivedanta College by the grace of Yadavendra Maharaj, Vasamandala Prabhu, that we will start to actually train teachers and leaders, not in somebody else's philosophy of education, but in our philosophy of education. And then we will start to have a school system, hopefully by the grace of Living Krishna Prabhu, where you can walk into that school and the philosophy of education is alive. Then we are authentic. And then I believe we will see the real success that we've been wanting when we actually live who we are, know who we are, and live who we are. So thank you very much. I think later in the panel we'll have discussions. I thought this was really a one-week presentation that I had to boil down into 40 minutes of perfect. And for all of the many, many, many folks in this presentation, I ask that you please excuse me. Hopefully there was at least something that will help you in your service. Hare Krishna.